Gillette's best blades can save you up to 50% versus the other shave club's $9 per month plan. That's right. Close, comfortable, smooth, and up to 50% off versus the other shave club. Join today at GilletteShaveClub.ca.
At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's At the Letters for Thursday, March the 3rd on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. I am your co-host, Arden Zwelling, as always, and I am, as always, joined by Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, we tried earlier today to do this in the car in Shai Davidi's Chevy on the way down. We felt pretty good about it, and then we listened, or actually we sent it back to producer Sam McKee, who said, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah, that first podcast was really good as far as we were concerned, but apparently not on the audio front. So hopefully this one will be even better second time around.
Doesn't seem important to me, the audio, really, but Sam didn't like it. So we're now in the press box at beautiful McKechnie Field in Bradenton, Florida, where the Pittsburgh Pirates have spring training, and we are joined by two fine gentlemen who work with us at Sportsnet. One of them is the man who drove us down today in the pseudo-recording studio that ended up being not up to snuff. Shai Davidi, Shai, how are things?
All right, you know, it's a shame because we really nailed the content on the way down. I think people would have really enjoyed the conversation with the toll booth operator that we had. Also, our review of our breakfast, which is now no longer valid. We can probably discuss dinner options at this point. We should. So we'll go from there and try to nail it twice in one day.
Now that I think back on this, Ben and I might have gotten fired for that podcast for basically reviewing Dunkin' Donuts, reviewing the car that we were in, and then interacting with the toll booth operator. And the fourth person in on this podcast is currently our technician today, I guess, as he's holding the voice box thingy. It's the host of Jays Talk. It's from the Blue Jays play-by-play radio team on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Mike Wilner. Mike, how are things?
Things are well, and I have to say I'm honored to be part of this podcastishness with the three men who have shared my broadcast booth this first week of spring.
Yes, how has it been having these amateurs come in and try to do the job with you calling these spring training games?
It's been a lot of fun, I have to tell you. I'm in the spring, it's a lot looser, it's a lot more easy. But the three of you, I mean, there's been good baseball discussion all three games. There's been good analysis from all three of you. And I've enjoyed it. I hope you guys have too.
Right on. Let's dive right into it and get this thing on the road. We're going to talk fifth starter. We all just watched Gavin Floyd throw his first two innings of the spring. They didn't go great. Had trouble getting into the zone early in his first inning. In his second inning, he was more in the zone. He gave up just the one run. There was some hard hit contact in the second inning. He was having some trouble with the mound. His foot was slipping, and he said that was giving him some trouble getting into the zone. Shai, you watched him closely. What did you think of what you saw?
Well, that was really the one thing that Mike and I got stuck on up here, and we didn't have the chance to go down and talk to him, but we're like, what is going on with him on the mound? And we could see his ankle shuffling as he planted. We're like, that can't be healthy. Usually that's not a good idea. But the command is what really surprised me. It was, I believe, only one first pitch strike to the nine batters he faced. There were a handful of 3-0 counts, and then he was able to battle back, which is a good sign, but you don't want to have to battle back consistently from 3-0 counts because usually that's a poor recipe. So I think for Gavin Floyd's perspective, this is a get work in type of outing and make some adjustments and really come back out next time and try to show some improvement.
Yeah, that's what it looked like to me too. I mean, 3-0 on the first two hitters, full count on four of the five hitters that he faced in the first inning, and the only one he didn't get to a full count on was because Mike Morse ripped an RBI double off of him on a 2-1 pitch. I know he said after the game he was amped up and excited, but it was still surprising to see. And then when he found the zone in the second inning, two hard line drives. Chris Colabello makes that one great play, and Junior Lake almost makes a circus catch on another. So he didn't look good today. But again, it's first outing of spring, right? What does it matter? Gavin Floyd's been in the major leagues forever. The concern about him is that he's only pitched 21 times in the big leagues in 3 years.
And I think it stands in contrast to what we saw from Aaron Sanchez the other day.
even though Aaron Sanchez allowed a run, he was mixing in all three pitches, and I think that there's a lot to like from the Blue Jays' perspective about what they saw from a pitcher who was throwing 94 to 98 miles an hour with his fastball, mixing in secondary pitches, and even though that changeup that he threw over the plate was hit really deep into the bleachers and maybe beyond left field and the fence out there at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium, I think that that's not a pitch he would make in the regular season, and he showed some pretty good progress.
Yeah, Kevin Floyd's a guy who's had to overcome a lot in the last 3 years. He had Tommy John surgery, and then he fractured his elbow not once, but twice. So he spent a lot of time rehabbing, a lot of time at work. And, you know, for him, I think this spring is just about getting back to being himself again and just about being a major league pitcher and proving that he can do that. I think that he would be okay taking a role in the bullpen. I don't know if it's as important for him that he, you know, is in the starting rotation. Whereas for Aaron Sanchez, it feels like it's very important for him that he earns a starting job.
Yeah, and I think that Sanchez is someone who is so tantalizing as a starting pitcher, and that's really the determination that Jays are going to have to make. Can he turn over a lineup a few times? Can he mix in those secondary pitches? I mean, Shai, I think that's one of the real questions, one of the bigger questions for the Blue Jays this entire spring.
Not only for this spring, to me, this is a real long-term question, because if Aaron Sanchez is in your rotation and able to get to remotely close to the ceiling we've all thought he was going to for years and years and years, then the trajectory for this team, the long-term outlook for this team is substantially different, because then you've got a real key cog under cost control in your rotation for the foreseeable future. And that allows you to do all kinds of different things with your core. But if he is limited to a reliever, then there's a lot of work to be done in that rotation, because beyond Marcus Stroman and maybe Drew Hutchison, there aren't a lot of long-term pieces in that staff right now.
What I found interesting with the whole Sanchez rotation and bullpen debate is what John Gibbons said before Thursday's game in Bradenton. And all your points, all of you guys, are 100% right. But what jumps out, aside from Sanchez, is that Gibby sees Jesse Chavez as a potential late-inning, high-leverage reliever if he doesn't wind up in the rotation, which is something, I don't know about the three of you, but that kind of really set me back a little bit, something I never expected to hear.
Yeah, a surprise for sure. And I mean, I wonder if we should take it with a grain of salt, given that in the past we've seen guys like Bo Schultz anointed as setup men only to be removed from those roles in relatively short order. But it was a surprise to me, and maybe Chavez is one of those guys who could succeed in that role. He just hasn't necessarily had that chance.
I would have thought of him more as long man if he was in the bullpen, or, you know, a swing guy. You know, I mean, they are missing kind of that Liam Hendricks role, and that guy who could, you know, go three innings, I guess, if you needed him to. But really, Liam Hendricks kind of did something similar last year, where he became kind of, you know, a medium to high leverage right-handed reliever up there, got the velocity up. Wilner's wincing at me that maybe he didn't see enough high leverage to satisfy you. Maybe it was more medium leverage. But, you know, he was the guy, he got the velocity up, and he was kind of a one-inning guy at a certain point last year, Liam Hendricks. Maybe, you know, Jesse Chavez, a guy who did throw harder earlier in his career. He did throw up to 94. He's been down to 91 lately as he's been trying to be a starter. Maybe he brings that velocity up, and maybe he could fill that role.
Certainly that's something that we're going to look forward to. But to me, the bigger takeaway from that comment is the Blue Jays are really looking to not just be three deep. They're looking to be four deep, you know. And they have Cecil, they have Osuna, they have Storen, but they want someone else there. And if Sanchez is in the rotation, they're still trying to find someone. And Rafael Soriano was a flyer they took, re-signing him to a minor league deal with an invitation to spring training. He hasn't arrived yet. He's still sorting through some visa issues, so we don't have a sense of what he looks like and where he's at, and that may take a while. But really, they appear to be on the hunt for another reliever, and they're going to look at their internal options, and I'm sure they're looking externally too to see if they can have someone in that medium to high leverage situation range that they can pop in there.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the bullpen, and let's move on to that, because, you know, today we heard Aaron Loop is dealing with some forearm tightness, a strain in there, and he sat down for 5 days, didn't use it, tried to throw today, didn't feel great about it. I'll throw it to you, Mike. If Aaron Loop can't go for the start of the season, if he has to miss extended time, where do the Blue Jays go for another left-handed reliever after Brett Cecil?
I think it's Pat Vendetti, and he pitched today in the game against the Pirates. exclusively as a lefty against two switch hitters and one left-handed hitter. Vendetti last year with Oakland, small sample size, rookie season, was phenomenal left on left. Like, lefties hit .116 off of him. I think the on base was like .160. It was ridiculous how good he was left on left. Right on right, he was really good too. Switch hitters killed him. Switch hitters hit .391 against him with an OPS, I think, over 1,000. Again, small sample. It was only 23 plate appearances, but he pitched exclusively left-handed to those switch hitters. So maybe, you know, it's your second lefty, right? Brett Cecil's not a situational lefty. He doesn't have to be a left-on-left guy. He showed that he can get righties out. But if you're looking for a left-hander to come in and get a lefty or two out in the sixth inning, I don't think Venditti's a bad option. And Chad Jurado is another guy who impressed people in the Arizona Fall League this year. He pitched today as well. Also look good. He's an option too, but there's not a lot of depth of major league quality lefties, I don't think, here beyond Loop.
Yeah, and that's why it's a potentially big question for this team. Not that it's necessarily bad news. We can't assume that. Brett Cecil was sidelined last spring before returning, but it's never good news when you hear about forearm tightness. And I think Vendetti is one of those guys to watch. And for most fans and for a lot of media members, and I think even some of Pat Vendetti's teammates, he's a novelty. It's something completely different, something unlike anything we've ever seen before, unless you're Joe Siddle, in which case you've caught an ambidextrous pitcher. But really, it's something totally new, and yet for Venditti, it's his profession. It's something that he is really devoted to, and he wants to be able to get guys out on both sides of the plate.
One thing to add, last year, Ryan Tepera, really effective as a righty against lefties, so much so that in the playoffs, when they used him, they said, we can kind of use him as a second lefty, so that might be an option too.
We did hear John Gibbons say after the game that, yeah, Pat Vendetti's, he's a great story, it's a fun story, but he has to get guys out. And then John Gibbons said, and it looks like he's able to do that. And it's, you know, it's interesting that comes on the same day that Aaron Loop has a bit of a setback. You know, maybe he could be a guy to make the team. Another dark horse guy, Joe Biagini, who pitched today, a very hard thrower. You know, he hasn't pitched above double A, but he's kind of an older guy for double A. You know, the Blue Jays got him in the Rule 5 draft, so if they don't have him on the Major League roster, he'll have to go back to the San Francisco Giants. He could be, you know, kind of a dark horse candidate in this race. Shy, I know we both have talked to Drew Storen in the past week and about what he's going to bring to this team and how he's going to kind of try to, you know, just what he's going to add to the back end of that Blue Jays bullpen. I mean, what did you take away from your conversations with him?
He's a really thoughtful guy who's put a lot of, or done a lot of navel gazing into what he needs to do to be successful. And to me, the key quote that stuck out to me is when he said, I used to be a bar fighter type, but I've learned to be more of a boxing type. And that tells you that there is some analytical process there by a guy who is really studying what it's going to take for him to succeed, and that he does have the stuff to overpower a hitter, but that he knows sometimes that it's better for him to be in the zone or to maybe use his changeup or his slider and using other weapons at different times where it's not all, you know, I'm blown up by you to make hitters think and disrupt their timing in that way. So he's also had a lot of adversity to deal with. A lot of that has been well discussed, and maybe we don't need a rehash here. But when you've had somebody who's dealt with adversity, a lot of times it gives them the tools to be able to deal with difficult situations. And if he's able to do that, that's going to be really good news for the Blue Jays.
Absolutely. Drew Storen's a really I think insightful is really the right way to put it. And he's certainly had a lot to think about over his major league career. But people, you know, I don't think Toronto fans understand just how good he's been. You know, a couple years ago, he had 63 appearances, gave up 7 earned runs. I mean, this is a guy who was absolutely lights out for Washington. And, you know, it's not like he's getting that much of a National League discount. He's facing pinch hitters late in games. He's facing guys that, you know, other managers are trying to match up against him. It's been very, very good. Ben, let's move to, or hey, you got something on Drew Storen? It looks like you do.
I just wanted to ask you, you spoke to him as well today. What did you take away from talking to Storen?
It's just what I just said. You know, he's an insightful guy, really interesting guy to talk to. We talked a lot about kind of the mentality of being a closer and about how, I mean, what was interesting about when I talked to him, he said, I'm kind of addicted to the situation where I can't win. You know, it's like golf. You know, you're never going to win this game. I mean, you're never going to beat it. And as a major league, you know, late inning reliever, you're never going to win. Everybody's going to remember your worst start. You know, a lot of guys say that to get a good sense of, you know, how good a reliever is, you should take his best four outings and his worst four outings and eliminate them and just go with those middle ones. Then you get a sense of, because that's really the body of work. And that's really the aggregate right there. Every, you know, closer and every late inning reliever is going to have his blow-ups and his meltdowns, and he's going to have those, you know, innings where, I mean, it's like bang, 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 three outs just like that. Ben, you spoke to Dalton Pompey recently and Tim Raines, I believe. What'd you take away from those conversations, and you know, where is Dalton right now?
Well, I think that watching Pompey this spring is different than last spring. Last spring, he was completely obsessed with making the roster, and he pulled that off, but it led to a disappointing start to the season for him. And this year, realistically, his chances of making the team are not good. But he knows that at some point this year, he's going to be called on. So that's where Pompey's at. And Raines had some interesting comments. He said that even though Pompey is not positioned to make this roster, if he were Dalton Pompey, he would be going out there trying to prove people that he should be that everyday left fielder and not conceding anything. So I think it's a fine line for Pompey when he's trying to walk that line between going all out and trying to win a job and yet saving something for a regular season that's going to last 6-7 months.
Well, and for him, I think it's going to almost definitely be in Buffalo that the regular season, at least to start. But like you said, Ben, they're going to call upon him at some point this year. He's really not in the fourth outfield battle. John Gibbons told us earlier this week that Pompey's going to play wherever he is, whether it's here or there. But I've been impressed with him so far in the spring. I mean, he butchered a fly ball in the intra-squad game and had a little trouble with the sun, probably. We hope it was a sun Tuesday in Clearwater. Today in Bradenton, he made a fantastic catch to end an inning. He's had some terrific at-bats early on, just grinding out at bats and working back from falling behind in the count. And these are the things that got him to the major leagues in the first place, and it's great to see them again.
And that's the key point, is that there's still some development to happen there. And he's making progress. He's showing the good signs. Is he consistent with it yet? That part I'm not certain. But he could end up in a race for a spot if Michael Saunders doesn't show that he's healthy. And it's looked good so far, and Ben, you wrote about it today, and you got a chance to speak with him about it. But to me, the fact that Michael Saunders has looked so good so far has been a really important takeaway. There's still a lot of time, still a lot of wear and tear that has to happen before we can meaningfully say the knee problems are behind him. But if Michael Saunders is healthy, then Dalton Pompey is firmly out of that mix. And then all of a sudden it becomes a race for the fourth outfield spot between Junior Lake, Ezekiel Carrera, Daryl Siciliani, and Dominic Brown. And then, of course, you get into the handedness. Only Junior Lake is a right-handed bat, so you're going to carry an extra left-handed bat. Are you comfortable with that? Does the fourth outfielder become someone who gets cut in the last week of spring training from another team? But if Michael Saunders is healthy, then it changes a lot for this team.
It was interesting to talk to Michael Saunders today because he kind of spoke about his game yesterday at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium, which was really his first live baseball game since last May. And he said it was really, really special moment. He said he had the butterflies going. He said when he got his first pop fly to left field, he almost overran it because he was so excited to get there. And that, you know, he really called it a special moment. And then he talked about today, you know, getting to come out and kind of feel like himself again, and, you know, turning around first base after the single, and, you know, taking a hard turn and stopping, getting back to the base, you know. He talked about facing a lot of lefties early in spring because he's seen almost exclusively left-handed pitching, and he's a guy who really likes to see that early in spring. He kind of recalled the story a few springs ago. He only got to see about four left-handed pitchers, felt like he came into the season at a disadvantage against lefties, and he says he likes to have that experience in spring to find his comfort zone. John Gibbons has said he'd like, you know, Michael Saunders to play nearly every day if he can. You're going to need to use some DH at-bats probably to do that. I don't know how much you want him on the turf, but if he's playing every day, I mean, it does come down to those four for that fourth outfield spot. And if, you know, if you're not going to platoon Michael Saunders, maybe it's not so important that it's a right-handed bat. But Ben, I mean, I think you'd probably appreciate if you did have that right-handed option, you know, as your fourth outfielder.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really the essential part in all of that is getting a healthy season from Michael Saunders. And I entered this spring as a skeptic on that front. I think that two games can only changed so much, but at the same time, he's looked good on defense. He had a nice line drive single to right field against a left-hander today. And so those are the positive signs that the Blue Jays will need to see to enter the season confident that he can play a full season as their everyday left fielder.
I'm not a Michael Saunders skeptic. I've thought, you know, corrective surgery is supposed to be corrective surgery. He had an issue with a bad bone bruise last year and wasn't able to overcome it. But Ari Dickey had the meniscus done this offseason, and we're not concerned about him. But Saunders, I understand, 74 games or 78 games in 2014. So he hasn't, I mean, he hasn't exactly been the picture of health over the course of his career. But I'm firmly in the Michael Saunders corner. And I love today the play he made in the fourth inning with a runner on first, that little duck snort down the left field line, and he comes up and doesn't try to make the hero throw at third, holds that runner at first, throws to the right base, next guy hits into a double play. Not something we saw enough of from Blue Jays outfielders last year. So I'm a skeptic as to can he play 150 games, and I do think they need a right-handed hitting fourth outfielder, but I'm all in on Saunders.
I agree with all that. The thing that I really liked about him today was his turn at first base on his single. And it was an aggressive, sharp turn, the type of hard turn that puts a lot of strain on your knees. And the fact that he has the confidence to make an aggressive turn like that, to me, tells you that he really believes in the health of his knee. And sometimes, doesn't matter what a person says, you look at the actions. And that's a type of action that says, I'm healthy, I can do this.
Absolutely. And as the more we see more spring games, we're going to get to know more about Michael Saunders, know more about Gavin Floyd, know more about these guys who are competing in this camp. It's nice to just get this information and be able to talk with a bit of an informed opinion about it. So as the sun sets in Bradenton, the sprinklers whir and the leaf blowers buzz, we're going to step away for a break. Come back with your questions on At The Letters.
First pitch to Saunders is rammed into right field. That's a base hit. In to score is Dominguez. Behind him is Quintero. To third, Goins. It's a two-run single for Michael Saunders. And the Blue Jays' lead is up to 4-1.
It continues on At The Letters from McKechnie Field in Bradenton, Florida. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Nicholson-Smith, as always, joined by special guests Mike Wilner and Shai Davidi, both of the Sportsnet family. We're going to get to your questions that we wanted to answer in the car. I'm sorry again to everybody who was expecting the road trip podcast. We tried our best. We sent it back to Toronto. Producer Sam McKee did the Lord's work, actually putting it together with music, with road trip themed music and all, and the audio was just too crap to use. So We are here doing this now. We're going to answer your questions. Let's get right into it. We'll go to you first, Shai. This is from at SKMCB67. Shai, what happened to AJ Jimenez as a catching prospect?
Well, he's suffered so many injuries that it's completely derailed his progress. He had Tommy John surgery. He had some complications after Tommy John surgery. End of the 2014 season, injured his wrist in a collision at home plate. He tried to play through it. Ended up last year tearing a ligament, damaging some cartilage. That led to another season-ending surgery. Back in camp, had a base hit today, looked good behind the plate, and he's looking to try and make up for lost time, and really that's what it is in his case. He's just lost so much development time. He just needs to play and show that he's really got the ability to make progress.
He is, he's kind of lost that prospect tag, I would say. I don't know if we can really define him as a prospect anymore, but there's nothing wrong with having catching depth in your organization, especially when Russell Martin is really the only big league catcher, everyday catcher at least, that you have. Wilner, we'll go to you. This comes from Jack Sullivan at Jack M. Sully. Could Drew Hutchison succeed as a reliever, or should he be sent to AAA if he doesn't crack the rotation?
Does that have to be an either-or? I think he could certainly succeed as a reliever. I also think he should be sent to AAA if he doesn't make the rotation. I don't think you give up on Drew Hutchison as a starter yet. He's only, what, 25 years old. He had an up-and-down year last year, but the ups were really good as the downs were horrific. So I'm not ready to say Drew Hutchison is done in the rotation yet, but could he succeed as a reliever? Sure. I mean, most guys' stuff plays up when you shorten them and they only have to go out and go full out for one inning or four or five outs. And, yeah, I think he could be a very good relief pitcher, but I still think that there's time for Drew Hutchison to become a very good big league starter.
I think right now the Blue Jays are in the position of having more starters than spots, but it's amazing how quickly that could change. So I think you want to preserve that starting depth as long as possible, and for me that includes Drew Hutchison.
Couldn't agree more. Why would you lose depth right now, especially Drew Hutchison, just 25? Why? There is no sense in doing that. Let's go over to Ben for this one. This is from Michael DeLosa, who asks, is Edwin Encarnacion more likely to be signed, given that Jose Bautista said there were no negotiations on his number?
You know, I think the more likely, less likely game is probably not going to go away anytime soon, but at the same time, to pretend that we know exactly how likely these things are would be to mislead our audience. I think, really, Encarnacion has had some preliminary talks. Bautista, as far as we know, is sticking by that number, which we don't know what that is. It really is a situation that's going to develop in the course of the next few weeks, but to say more or less likely, I think, is a real challenge.
Yeah, we have no idea. You know, as much as people would love to think we do, as much as people in our industry would love to think that they do, nobody has any idea of what's going to happen. It does seem like Edwin would be a little bit easier to sign. It seems like he'd be a little bit more comfortable. But, you know, Shai went on the radio yesterday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and said he expects Edwin to be demanding north of $20 million. I think there are people out there who think Edwin would sign for 13 or 14 a season, and I just don't. I think that's a little too pie in the sky. It's going to cost you money for both these guys, regardless of which one or both that you sign.
As well it should. I mean, we're talking about two of the most dominant offensive performers in the game over an extended period of time. And the system is going to reward them where power was at this past offseason on the free agent market. Average annual value of $24 million in the contracts for Chris Davis and Justin Upton, Yonis Cespedes. Those guys make a pretty good argument are better offensive players than those three. So it is going to be expensive. And, you know, this game is going to be around, as you said, Ben, for a long time until there's some sort of indication one way or the other which way it's going. And I don't know that it's necessarily healthy because it's just obsessing over the same thing. And at some point, the Blue Jays and the representatives for both players are going to have to figure out whether they're aligned in valuations or not. And they may need the market to break the tie.
I want to take a quick poll of the room here. First Jays talk of 2016 is this Saturday afternoon after the Jays and Phillies game. What percentage of the calls will be about Jose and Edwin?
How many are you going to take?
Let's say we get to 10 calls to make it easy for you guys with math.
I go with a strong 40% right there.
I'm gonna go low here. I'm going to say only one.
I'm going to go right in the middle there. I'm going to say probably like two or three, but it depends. If there's something else to cause panic that happens during the game, if Drew Hutchison gets blasted over one inning, or maybe he's tremendous, and all of a sudden that's going to trigger a different sort of discussion. So, you know better than I, because you are the host of Jays Talk. But my sense from a distance, listening and occasionally sitting in with you, is that it depends on what fire is burning on that day.
I will say this. I think you're all low. And I can pretty much guarantee the first call is going to be about those two guys.
All low, every single one of us. All right, well, we'll see. We're going to keep track of this on Saturday, and we're going to add it up. And next week on At the Letters, we'll figure out who the champion is. Moving along to Dylan Abreu Coburn, whose Twitter handle I'm not even going to try to pronounce. What happens to Darwin Barney once Devin Travis returns in May? Does he have any options in his deal? Darwin Barney does have options, but he is making a major league salary. So if he did get optioned, he would still be costing $1 million, which, if that matters or not to you as a fan, I'm sure it matters to the Blue Jays front office. But it is nice to have that flexibility on Darwin Barney that you can send him to AAA if you needed to. The thing is, is Devin Travis going to be ready for May? He hasn't resumed baseball activities yet, and we're into March. He's going to have to, A, finish his rehab, then B, do a kind of modified spring training before he's ready to go. We may be looking at June before Devin Travis is ready, so why not have that depth of Ryan Goins, Darwin Barney, Troy Tulowitzki, obviously up the middle of the infield. Blue Jays, I think, put themselves in a good position by getting Darwin Barney on the deal that they did.
Very much so. And during the webcast of today's game, we joked a little bit about Darwin Barney's offensive potential. And I still, even though he had another great day at the plate today, I was still saying jokes about how he's the new slugger. I've already passed their statute of limitation and need to cease immediately. But he's a gifted defender, and he's going to steal hits when he's playing. And that's what he's here to do. And that protection, the ability to ensure that Troy Tulowitzki can take the occasional day off if needed. They can spell Ryan Goins at second base if needed. They have a little bit of platoon protection if there's a tough left-hander out there. All those things make a ton of sense, and Darwin Barney's going to have value, and he's going to make an impact on this team one way or the other.
Yeah, as much as people love Ryan Goins defensively, Darwin Barney is just as good. He is a phenomenal defensive middle infielder. But to what Shai said, Darwin Barney is hitting .833 this spring with an OPS over 2,000. The statute of limitations has not expired.
Let's go to Shai for this one. This comes from @TuloWhiskey, who asked a truly remarkable amount of questions, and I'm just going to use one because we would be here all day if we answered all of them. Shai, Max Pentecost, is he still a catcher? What's going on with our number 11 pick? Where do you see him ending up this year?
A lot of that is going to depend on how healthy he is, and that's really what's been holding him back. He's had multiple procedures on his arm in the last couple of years. It's completely held him back, and the Blue Jays are prioritizing getting him at bats and letting the defense work itself out afterwards. As much as they really liked his catching ability, he's also a pretty gifted hitter, and the Blue Jays are going to get him some reps at the plate, be it at first base or be it at DH, one way or the other, he's going to see some at-bats. And once his arm is good and ready, if that takes place, then they'll get him back behind the plate and let him build up from there.
Can I hijack this conversation a little bit and ask a question of you three? Last week, those Jay Bruce for Michael Saunders rumors, conflicting reports about a minor leaguer failing a physical that killed the deal. Is there any chance that could have been Max Pentecost?
1,000,000% no.
Sounds pretty certain, Shai. I'm going to have to agree with that kind of certainty. Ben, do you want to? Looks like Ben can't even speak.
I completely disagree with Shai. No, of course I agree. Yeah.
See, the only thing for me is that if it's true that a minor leaguer failing a physical could kill a deal, it would have to be a pretty significant minor league guy, which would stun me that you would have to add that to Saunders to get Jay Bruce. And really, Pentecost is the only significant minor league guy I could think of who might fail a physical. But Shai's pretty certain, doesn't even want to answer this.
I wonder if the whole story with that whole trade has come out, and I wonder if it ever will come out. I mean, there's so many things don't add up. When you even just look at the money that the Blue Jays would have to be taking on, just all of a sudden you can afford another, you know, $9 million on your payroll. Suddenly, I mean, there's a lot at play there. There's a lot that didn't add up about that. Even just the Blue Jays' interest in Jay Bruce in particular, because he hasn't had very much luck at the plate over the last two seasons. It's a lot of mystery around that deal. We'll see what happens. Let's go around the circle on these last three, because they're pretty easy. I will start to my right to Ben with this one. Who do you think wins the fourth outfielder job?
I'm going to go with Ezekiel Carrera. I think that the combination of his speed, the ability to play center field, and the experience last year when he contributed down the stretch and really throughout the season for this team will make him the front runner for that job. And barring a big spring from someone else, I won't be surprised at all if he's on the opening day roster.
I think he's probably the front runner. I like the potential of Dominic Brown, the former big league all-star, but I hate the fact that they both hit left-handed, and so does Darryl Siciliani. I really think the fourth outfielder is not here yet. I think that it's going to be someone who's out of options at the end of camp, a right-handed bat who can play a little bit of center field, and they'll bring him in then. I know it's kind of a cop-out, but that's where I'm going.
You know, I'm not – those guys do pop up occasionally in the last week of spring training. I'm not certain they can count on that. And even if it does happen, I'm not certain you're necessarily going to do better than Ezekiel Carrera. And sometimes in these instances, a known commodity, he showed the ability to sit on the bench and be able to come into a game and deliver a hit and give you a quality at bat. And really, that's really important for a bench player, because aren't going to be very many pinch hit opportunities. And the other element that I think is good for the Blue Jays to have is that speed guy on the bench that if you do need to run for someone, they're going to need on occasion to run for Edwin Encarnacion or some other guy, Justin Smoke, when he's in the lineup. And they're going to have to get some speed on that bench one way or the other.
I think I agree with Shy and Ben that it's going to be Ezekiel Carrera, but let me take Dominic Brown just to be contrarian and just to say that he is, you know, a left-handed hit bat with a ton of pull power. And if there's a ballpark where pull power plays pretty well, it is the Rogers Center. So give me Dom Brown for those reasons alone. Moving right along, I'll start with Wilner on this one. Who are you most excited to see play this year?
Like, not spring training? We're not talking about the kids? Because if it's the kids, it's Anthony Alford, who we've already seen do some great stuff, showed a good eye at the plate, show some speed on the bases, was basically, you know, didn't even kick it into high gear to score from first today on a double into the left field corner. I'm very excited about him. During the season, I'm really excited to see Troy Tulowitzki, because I don't think we saw Troy Tulowitzki last year. This guy is arguably the best shortstop in baseball, and he came to the Blue Jays and he hit .237, and he wasn't himself, even though he was certainly spectacular in the field. But I think that he's going to surprise a lot of Blue Jays fans, has a chance to hit .300, chance to hit 30 home runs, and be a real force, unfortunately, in the middle of the lineup, but a real force for the Blue Jays this season.
I agree on Tulo. I think that it's pretty fun to watch elite Hall of Fame caliber players in their prime, and that's what Tulowitzki is. And so watching him on offense, watching him on defense, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see him potentially put it all together for an entire season.
I agree with both of you. Just a quick note, I've stopped naming the question askers because I'm an idiot. So just Danny Middaugh asked the fourth outfielder one. Matthew Burrows asked this one about who we're most excited to see play. I am most excited to see Jose Bautista because we have seen motivated Bautista, but this is uber motivated Jose Bautista in a walk year, trying to prove that he's worth whatever it is that he's asking for. This is a guy who really relishes that kind of spotlight, relishes those challenges, really. You know, you see any, you know, whenever he gets thrown at, it seems like the next pitch is going out of the yard. So this is, you know, this offseason kind of was the ultimate Jose Bautista being thrown at. And I feel like this season could be the ultimate one for a guy like Jose Bautista, who has just absolutely everything to play for over these 162.
You're bang on with that, Arden. Jose Bautista is always compelling theater. And I think this year, in every regard, he is going to be must-watch television or at the ballpark, wherever you want to describe it. But just to give a different answer, I'm going to say Aaron Sanchez, because I've been hammering this point home all winter. If you've been reading my articles, I apologize for writing and saying it so often, but it's a linchpin for this franchise. And if he's able to take the workouts that he did over the offseason, the way he adjusted his body, and really leverage that and become that potential front of the rotation type of starter, I think it's going to be a ton of fun to watch.
And our final question from Darren at The Cultus. And I guess I'll start with Shy because I started with Ben, then I started with Wilner. So we're coming right back to you, Shy. Coming in hot. How many visits to Waffle House will you make this month?
I'm going to say nil. Not big on breakfasts outside the hotel, looking for convenience. Also, not necessarily big on paying for waffles. I'll make pancakes at home. I know what's going into them. A little skeptical what's happening at the Waffle House.
I'm going to say one or two. I'm a big fan of the Waffle House. I dig my hash browns smothered and covered. There's certainly no question about that. I've had some great Waffle House stories in Florida over the course of 16 spring trainings. None bigger, and you could probably still Google this. Jordan Bastian, who used to cover the Blue Jays for MLB.com, now covers the Indians, wrote a post. I guess it wasn't a story. It was on his blog post, and the title of that is Trampus, King of Waffles. That was the name of our server, our tooth-challenged server at the Waffle House on Thono de Sassa on the way from here to Lakeland. The Waffle House is a wonderful, wonderful, horrible place.
Yeah, I'm going to predict that the answer for me is zero because mornings are busy, but I really hope that the answer is two or three because I like a good Waffle House breakfast as well.
not a big breakfast guy over here, or at least not lately. I don't really like really anything I eat to be either smothered or covered. And I also don't really like to pay for waffles. I like that. We're not paying for waffles. Waffles shouldn't be paid for, Shy. I like it. So yeah, zero for me. I need to get back to just not piling crap into my body, just absolute high octane crap into my body. I need to get back in the gym, get back this this high performance athlete physique that I normally carry around. So that's it for the At the Letters podcast. Our thanks to Shy Devine and Mike Wilner and Ben Luxton Smith. I'll let you each plug something since you were taking your time being with us here. Shy, do you have anything you'd like to plug, anything you'd like to even just say to the denizens of listeners that we have?
Well, we've been pumping out a ton of content at sportsnet.ca. Make sure you're checking it all out. There's been some great stuff. And we've had the dream team here together for a good long stretch. It's going to be breaking up soon as a couple of us we're shifting in and out. But we'll be tag teaming each other into the foray of work here, and we'll continue to keep you informed and with lots of content to read.
I hope I'm not getting tag teamed by any of you, to be honest, but let's pass it off to Wilner. You got anything to plug?
Well, he didn't, but I'll plug Shy's book. It's coming out in late April, early May, The Big 50, which I had the pleasure of proofreading, and that was a lot of fun. It's a fantastic read, and I pumped it on the webcast as well. I will also plug the webcast. Every single Blue Jays game this spring is available on the interwebs. We'll be on radio every weekend, every Saturday, Sunday game, and during March break. The rest of them online through the MLB.com audio package, which is free for the spring. They'll ask you for a credit card. I know they will. They're not going to use it. It's free for the spring. Shy's done a couple of games with me. Arden did the Intrasquad podcast. Ben did a game on Wednesday, and Ben's going to do Friday as well. Next week will be Kevin Barker sitting in with me, and the week after March break as well. And then we don't know what's happening the last week. But every Jays game on the interwebs, so give us a listen.
Very exciting stuff. Ben, what do you got?
Sportsnet.ca, check it out. I think that's usually my go-to plug, and I won't stray from that this time. We'll have lots of good stuff, and hopefully there's good stuff on there as we speak, so go check it out.
Ben, as consistent as ever, stable as a table, you can read my Gavin Floyd piece that should be up by the time this is up on sportsnet.ca. Be cool if you read that. I think it's pretty good. Just everything that we're putting out on sportsnet.ca, and keep listening to ATL. Thank you to everybody that has listened this week. We're sorry that this wasn't done in a car, but it was done in a radio booth. We stuck around in Bradenton, Florida to do this for you, the listeners, because we care that much. So thank you so much. Thanks to producer Sam Alton McKee, who put up with way too much crap from me and Ben today. Thanks to Shy Davidi for joining us, to Mike Wilner for joining us. For Ben Nixon Smith, Sam McKee, and everyone else, I'm Arden Zwelling. This has been At the Letters.